creature of Allah, who is given a life and who is to live and die within the confines of certain limitations and bounds. I do not sympathize with or show favor and indulgence to myself. On the contrary, I am hard upon myself. O Lord, you have done your best with me and have taught me everything that a man ought to know. I cannot claim or ask for anything more. I cannot achieve anything unless you bestow it upon me. I cannot protect myself against any sin or calamity without your grace and help. Lord, I seek your protection, lest in spite of your blessings, I should remain poor and needy. In spite of your guidance, I should go astray, and in spite of your power and might, I should be humbled and persecuted. Lord, let your blessings remain with me till my death. Out of the things entrusted to me by you, let my soul be the first to be taken away from me. Lord, I seek your protection against any desire of disobeying your commands, or against any allurement and instigation to give up your religion. I seek your help, lest inordinate desire should so overcome me as to drag me towards vice and wickedness. Sermon 221. This is a sermon discussing the basic principles of rights and obligations and how one is to fulfill them. Reciprocity of duties and how it is to be maintained. Obligations of the governed and the governing bodies and the duties of man towards Allah and religion. In this sermon, Imam Ali has condemned flattery and scuffancy and advised people not to flatter the ruling class. This is a sermon delivered in a difficult language. The Almighty Allah, by entrusting your affairs to me, has given me a right over you. And as I have a right over you, so you too have a right over me. This incumbency between us is mutual. The words rights and obligations have very extensive meanings, but their scope of application is small. Between two persons, one has the rights over the other. Only when the latter has rights over the former. One-sided obligation is possible only with Allah. He has rights over his creatures, but they in return have no rights over him. This is his privilege. His power and authority over his creatures and his equitable assignment of attributes and qualities to each one of them, and his justice in allotting just rights to every creature, have placed every one of them under obligation to him. And this obligation upon human beings takes the form of his implicit obedience to be carried out faithfully and sincerely. This obedience carries his reward. The divine gesture, thus rewarding our obedience, is simply his kindness and favor. Obedience to His commands and submission to His will is an obligation to which every person must submit, irrespective of any consideration of reward. On account of His benevolence, mercy and kindness, He promised to reward us many times more than the duty performed by us. A further sign of His grace is that He gave to the rights of one man over another an importance equal to His rights over human beings. He granted these rights reciprocally. Out of these obligations, there are certain duties which create others, and such created rights and duties do not become obligatory unless the original duty which creates them is first discharged, and unless their mutuality is recognized by both the parties. That is, unless a person fulfills his own obligations towards others, he is never in his rights to claim fulfillment of others' duties towards him. The greatest out of these reciprocal rights is that of a ruler on the ruled and that of the governed on the governing authority. The Almighty Lord has made them obligatory on both, the ruler and the ruled. This obligation, when discharged, creates a link of affinity and love between the ruler and the ruled. It raises the prestige and honor of their religion and enhances the happiness and contentment of the subject. But remember that no subject will be happy and contented unless the system of the government is sympathetic, humane, and congenial. And no ruler can introduce good form of government unless the subject is ready to meet their obligations readily, sincerely, and faithfully. When both the ruler and the ruled will discharge their respective duties sincerely and honestly, then it will be the time when truth and piety will prevail in society. Ways of religion will be firmly followed. Equity and justice will dominate. Traditions of our Holy Prophet will be accepted and acted upon. Civilization will achieve higher standards. A secure and firm government will be established. Unholy greed and avarice will give way to despair and disappointment, because there will remain no chance of acquiring wealth by unholy means and holding it against the canons of the religion. But when the subjects revolt against their ruler without any genuine cause and try to violate his authority, or when the ruler oppresses, tyrannizes, exploits, and deprives his subjects of their natural or acquired rights, then differences will creep in every phase of their relationship. Law and order will receive a setback. Despotism or totalitarianism will be the order of the day. Sincere and faithful following of religion will be given up. In fact, religion will be forsaken. Inordinate desires will rule human minds. Canons of religion will be flouted and disregarded. Minds will get abnormally perverted, and no one will hesitate to do the foulest deed, to disregard sacred duties and to treat them with contempt and disrespect. When society takes such a turn, then pious and good people will be dishonored and disgraced. retrograde, and wicked people will be honored and respected, and Allah's wrath will descend upon those people in one form or the other. Therefore, it is a sacred duty of everyone of you to advise and help one another, to discharge his duties and to fulfill his obligations. Because without thus helping one another and without doing this duty, nobody will attain the highest standard of obedience to the law or achieve his greatest favor, however keenly desirous he may be to achieve them, and however hard he may have tried for the same. As he has made it obligatory on human beings to advise one another to do good deeds, have noble thoughts, and persuade and help one another to fulfill their obligations, no one should consider himself exempted from this duty. Howsoever highly placed a man may be in society, howsoever extensive may be his rights upon others, and howsoever pious and religious he may be, he is not above the need of receiving others' help in fulfillment of his own obligations. In fact, nobody is so low or so humble that he cannot assist others in fulfilling their obligations. When Imam Ali's sermon reached this point, one of his companions rose and made a lengthy speech in which he eulogized Imam Ali greatly and declared that he had paid careful attention to his speech and had resolved to sincerely and faithfully carry out the instructions contained therein. Whereupon Imam Ali replied to him in the following words: "If someone has a firm faith in the greatness and might of Allah and sincerely believes in His glory, it is but natural for him to consider every person and everything insignificant in comparison to His supreme grandeur. This attitude is all the more proper and befitting for a person whom the Lord has profoundly favored with His blessings and bounties, because the more he receives His favors, the more are his rights established over him. For an honest and pious people, the worst thing which could come from a ruler is his behaving in such a way as to make them imagine that he greatly appreciates to be considered as far superior to others, or that he is proud and vain. So far as I am concerned, I hate to feel that you believe me to appreciate being flattered or to like being praised and eulogized. Thank Allah, I am not a man of that type. And if ever such a craving had crossed my mind, I would have compared my humility and powerlessness with His glory and might, and would have fought successfully against such a desire, because I know that no one possesses glory and might but He, and no one should give way to such assumption. People, after doing good deeds, who after achieving great things, often like to be praised. But I do not want you to praise me for obeying Allah sincerely and faithfully, and for having done my duty towards you, because I am still nervous about those obligations which I have to meet, and the responsibility of teaching you to realize the importance of duties and obligations, and persuading you to discharge them. So please do not flatter me, and do not speak to me in the way the people usually adopt towards tyrants, despots, and arrogant rulers. And with the desire of keeping me pleased, and under the wrong impression of shielding yourself from my anger or oppression, do not try to flatter me, and do not talk to me as if I am an oppressing, victimizing, and persecuting ruler. Do not behave towards me like scoffers, flatterers, and hypocrites. Do not imagine that I feel annoyed at truth, or at plain speaking, or that I like being praised and lauded over and above my merits. Remember, whoever does not appreciate being told a truth, or being reminded of equity and justice, will naturally find it difficult to speak truth, and to act according to the principles of equity and justice. Therefore, I advise you always to come up to me with your just and sincere advice, and to let me have your frank views without the least hesitation. Because I am not as faultless, as omniscient, and as omnipotent Allah Almighty. But I am sure Allah has protected me and will always protect me from doing something wrong, and He possesses more control over my mind than I myself. Remember that you and I are but creatures with respective limitations, and there is only one omnipotent Allah who has created us and who nourishes us. He is omnipotent and possesses more control over us than we have over ourselves. He brought us out of bestiality and ignorance and directed us towards the path of salvation and sublime knowledge. In place of our infidelity, He gave us religion, and He transformed our animal instinct into human intelligence and intellect. Sermon 2:22. O Allah, I seek your help and protection against Quraysh. They have disregarded my relationship with the Holy Prophet and with them. They have tried to humiliate and insult me. They have united to fight against me for the right and the place which I deserve more than they. They do confess that caliphate is my right if I take it. But they think it proper that I should be deprived of it. They tell me that either I should bear the loss and the grief patiently, or may die sadly and sorrowfully. Finding them in this mood, I considered the situation and found none but Ahlul Bayt, progeny of the Holy Prophet, who would come to my help. But I did not like that they should sacrifice their lives fighting against the enemy. I did not like to lose them. I patiently bore the insult and the injury. However bitter it was, I drank the cup, and however painful it was, I allowed the dagger to pierce into my chest. Sayyid Razi, may he rest in peace, the original compiler of the sermon, says that Imam Ali complained of Quraysh on more than one occasion, but his style and the way of expression is different in each sermon. Therefore, he has carefully noted down as many of these sermons as he could find. A greater part of this sermon could not be found. Sayyid Razi could get only the above passage, and the following sentences are about the gang of Talha and Zubair. Apparently, Imam Ali delivered this sermon before he went to Basra to check Talha and Zubair. They attacked the public treasury and the government officers who were appointed by me and who were faithful and obedient to me. They created disunity and disloyalty among my officers and lured many of them away from the government side. And when some of my followers were killed through treachery, while others fought bravely and met martyrdom. Sermon 223. After the victory in the Battle of Jammu, Imam Ali was going through the battlefield, and when he saw the dead bodies of Talha and Abdul Rahman bin Attab bin Usaid, he said, "Abu Muhammad, Talha, is lying dead so far away from his home and family. By Allah, I did not like that Quraysh be so kill battlefields and their bodies lying scattered under the sun and the stars. The son of Abd Manaf, Quraysh, had to pay dearly for what they tried to do against me. But leaders and important persons of the Bani Juma clan have escaped on this occasion. They were claiming something which they did not deserve, but they had to face frustration and disappointment." Sermon 224. What will a faithful Muslim do, and what will be done for him by Allah? He, a faithful Muslim, kept his mind alive and his knowledge fresh, but he killed his passions and gave up easy living till his weight was reduced and he became thin and weary. And a divine light showed him the way, directed him towards it, and passing through several doors, this light took him to the gateway of eternal peace and bliss, Babu Salam, and to the eternal abode of salvation. As he had resolved to do good deeds and to say good things, the Lord was pleased with him and destined him for a place free from the body and the strain of mind, a place of pleasing and tranquil relief from all painful and dreary activities, a place of peace and plenty. Sermon 225. In pre-Islamic days, ancestors worship was greatly in vogue in all nations of the world. Among the polytheists,